Hello and thank you for downloading the Scale Up Playbook from Wax On and the Marketing Society. And I'm Mark Runicus.
And I'm Harry Neal. And welcome to season four of the podcast. Over the next few episodes, we'll be tackling the big issues that you will face as you scale up your brand. And this episode one is all about cash.
So Harry, before we dive in and actually start talking about money, I thought we should probably take a bit of a step back and explain how we got here.
Yeah, so as I said, this is season four of the podcast, which means that we've already produced over 50 episodes since we started in 2019.
And yeah, we've been lucky enough to meet and chat to some really fascinating people, you know, founders, scale-up marketing leaders. And you and I thought it would be good to collate everything that we've learned from them and share that with you, our podcast listener.
Exactly. And all the conversations we'll be sharing in this season of podcasts are about the scale-up journey. And who better to tell us about that scale-up journey than the people who've actually done it, the founders of successfully scaled businesses. In 2021 alone, we spoke to nearly 30 founders, and we've learned loads about scaling up from them. And we start in this episode with undoubtedly the most important aspect of the scale-up process, funding. We'll discuss all the different kinds of investment and hear from the founders who've actually done it.
Yeah, coming up, we'll hear from Snaffling Pig's Udi Silver, Will McDowell from Tastily, the direct-to-consumer expert Mike Stevens, Scott Simpkin from Cedars, Chris Smith from Playfair Capital, and Nick Telson from Horseplay Ventures. So, shall we start talking about money, Harry?
Yes, and first I thought it'd be useful to take a quick look at the various ways to raise money to fund and scale businesses. The financial vocabulary can be a bit impenetrable, so let's quickly skip through the main terms. Let's start with pre-seed. This is the very first investment. It's the money you need to get you started. You've got an idea, energy, and enthusiasm, but no product. Pre-seed funding often comes from your own pocket and friends and family and that kind of person.
Okay, so that's pre-seed. Then I read that the next one, perhaps not surprisingly, is seed. That's when you've actually got the idea. You've probably created what I've learned is the MVP, the minimum viable product. You might even be launching in a small, possibly direct-to-consumer way. And at this stage, cash flow is always really important. You just simply cannot progress without it. So seed capital is normally where the really hard pitching starts. And securing that funding can be almost a full-time occupation for founders. And this is when you as a founder will probably be deciding between various funding possibilities, including angels, early stage venture capital, and accelerators. And these two stages together, the pre-seed and the seed, are known as the seed stage.
Then after that, you move into what's often referred to as early stage funding. So that includes Series A and Series B. At Series A, you've a proven concept, the business is operating, and you're now starting your scale-up journey. You're seeking additional funding is always about growth. But when you're scaling, you're now seeking sustainable growth. I've seen it referred to before as well as smart growth. But put it another way, typical growth is usually quite linear, a left-to-right gradually rising line on a chart. Scaling is an exponentially curved line on that chart. Scaling up also means growing without a significant and disproportionate increase in resources.
And you know, many founders have told us, as I've listened back to the earlier podcasts, that they've attracted Series A funding to specifically ramp up their marketing and their distribution, you know, implementing new sales and marketing processes to really drive significant revenue growth. And Series A funding is where you become much more interesting to venture capital, you know, angels with deeper pockets, sometimes called super angels, super angels, and crowdfunding, of course, as well.
So moving on from Series A, Series B is pretty similar, but usually with a much higher raise of investment. And from then, you're into kind of mid stages, your late stage funding, which includes Series C as it follows the alphabet. Of course, raising money doesn't stop there. But beyond Series C, founders may be beginning to think about some kind of exit, which could bring private equity investors to the table. But there is no definitive formula for what kind of investment and what time. That's really down to a host of factors, the most important being what you're comfortable with. which is why we decided to learn from other founders and hear about their own unique journeys to help you decide what's best for you.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go back then to that pre-seed stage. And one question that actually we heard was, is it really possible to launch a business nowadays with your own resources? Or do you have to raise a significant amount of money before you get going? Well, Udi Silver from pork snacks brand Snaffling Pig told us his business was inspired by a wager with his business partner, Nick. That wager was that you couldn't launch a business nowadays with just 500 quid. And they bet each other the cost of a dinner for the winner.
It is true. I still haven't bought him the dinner, which he still is trying to hold me to account. That's because I'm a tight git. But and I didn't want to let him win. But we had this basically, Nick and I, our stories are, we've both been buyers in previous days. I worked in retail and then in healthcare. Nick worked in retail, then in healthcare. We both met. We set up our first business. And Snaffling Pig came about because he turned around and said, look, I am getting a little bit, not bored, not the word, well, was it kind of bored of selling the same things to healthcare customers? Let's come up with something else and let's work out what we can build within our infrastructure in our other business and launch something different. So we had this bet for 500 quid to set up another business, and he came up with this great idea, Pork Snacks, which I was quite dubious about initially, because I thought, well, how are we going to do this? And he quite quickly found a manufacturer online. And the beauty about how we work together is we move very, very quickly. And we start to explore things and we test whilst we use the Pareto theory, which is if you're 80% are there, just give it a go. Don't wait for perfection, because someone else will be hot on your heels. So we kind of got some product very quickly, went pub to pub and started selling these big sacks of flavoured pork crackling. And a week later, we'd phone those pubs up and they say, yeah, they sold really well. Could you get us some more? And that's really how it started. So yeah, the bet was real. That's total truth. And here we are today. Fast forward 6 years and still going. I still owe him a steak dinner.
That was Snaffling Pig's Udi Silver there explaining that Snaffling Pig was launched with a bet, one of the more unusual pre-seed fundraising rounds that we've heard of. Tastely is a ready meal subscription service, and we spoke to founder Will McDowell, who told us all about his funding journey. To date, in total, he's raised just over £500,000, but he started out with a friends and family pre-seed investment of £25,000. And that was used almost immediately to cover a very important piece of capital expenditure, his packaging machine. He reminded us that there are some interesting investment vehicles out there that also offer support and advice to startups. He was supported by the Virgin Young Entrepreneur Scheme.
It's a challenge, definitely. Investment, getting money into the company is always going to be a challenge, and being able to convince people that you've got a great idea that's worth putting money in for their returns. So I started the journey. It was a month into the idea. So last April, went through a friends and family round. So raised, I think, 25K from friends and family just to get off the ground. The packaging machine that gives shelf life of 7 days, which is like a modified atmosphere packaging, cost 20 grand. So that ate that up pretty quickly. I didn't quite realize how expensive all of that was, as well as sort of ordering stock. So had to raise some more money at that point, but went down the Virgin Young Entrepreneurs Scheme, which highly recommend. You just mentioned Mike Stevens. He was my advisor from the Virgin's Young Entrepreneur Scheme. So a great guy to have on board, obviously background with Innocent Smoothie, set up a couple of companies himself and is an expert in the D2C world. So he, as part of that, you get funding. So that was another 25K that we got from that, but also you get help and advice for the first of 6 months from an expert. And Mike's sort of as good as it gets, obviously being on your podcast, that shows how good he is. So we went through that investment, that initial investment journey. And then we went to a sort of seed round, which we've been raising money over the last sort of over the last 4 or 5 months, and to close that out last month. which is sort of to allow us to operationally scale and to sort of invest in the marketing and invest in the technology and invest in the sort of the growth as well. So it allowed us to secure a new unit next door to ours. We could sort of increase our operational capacity by 4x, and now we're investing in sort of the marketing growth as well.
Will McDowell there from Tastily sharing his early investment journey. And the Snaffling Pig team continued their unique approach to fundraising when it came to their own seed raise. They went for what you might call the more extreme kind of funding approach by pitching the business on the TV show Dragon's Den. Here's Udi again to explain what that was like.
It was one of those decisions where we thought, this is either going to go, it goes one of two ways, right? So that whole experience for Nick and us as a business was pretty grueling, because you're in there for 2.5 hours. They do grill you a lot. They go through all your performance, all your numbers, all your manufacturing capability, viability, all your accreditations, and they really do want to get under the hood of the business in those 2.5 hours, but it gets edited in a way to make great TV. So, and within that process, we did a lot of prep, a lot of planning. I acted as a dragon, grilled Nick as much as I possibly could in terms of kind of what questions he could get asked. And you can never do enough preparation for that kind of exercise. So it was quite a tough exercise, but on the whole, the ultimate goal was to get a deal, because A, it makes great TV, and the PR afterwards is so powerful. And we raised money. Nick Jenkins was our investor from Moonpig, and he's still involved in our business, and he's been very supportive. We meet him once a year. We've taken the team down to his castle and spent a day there, and it's been great fun, and it's a real nice kind of piece of PR for us, and we used it to help open some doors with certain customers as well, because that kind of airtime is so important. We very rarely talk about it now, because I always feel like things like Dragon's Den, you can talk about it, but it has an expiry, and it's more important for us to talk about our other achievements and how the brand's evolved. But at the time, it was the right thing to do. It just meant the money we raised, we totally spent it all on stock to help us see through the next kind of wave of customers coming on board. But it really helped us, because we spent all of that money on stock. The website went absolutely crazy, but we built a lot of loyalty, and those early customers have really stuck with us, and they're repeat customers today. It was a great experience, and I absolutely recommend anyone who's thinking about doing it, do it, because the PR alone will be fantastic.
So if you're not quite up to the pressure of taking your pitch onto national TV, I totally understand that, but the concept of pitching to small and medium angels, which is basically what Snaffling Pig did, actually remains the same. Of course, sometimes business can take quite a dramatic turn, and the need to raise cash can be unexpected and urgent. And let's be honest, the COVID pandemic forced countless businesses to rethink their plans and seek additional investment much sooner than expected, as our guest Mike Stevens told us. Well, Mike started his founder journey at Innocent before launching his own confectionery brand, Peppersmith, and then becoming a serial entrepreneur. Well, he's now writing a book about the direct-to-consumer sector, and he shared one of his favourite stories from the book about fellow founder Bree Reed, creator of inclusive hosiery brand Snag.
She built her business really successfully, but then when the pandemic hit in sort of March, April 2020, the business got into real trouble, because what happened was, you know, sales fell off a cliff while everyone was wondering what the hell was going on. But it meant she was actually, or the business was knee deep into Facebook ads, and all of a sudden they had huge Facebook bills with no revenue coming in to pay them. And so essentially what she did, because the business was really on its knees, is that she crowdfunded the solution from her community. And the answer was to do a promotion, and the business didn't really do promotions, but it wasn't just like 30% off. It was essentially, it was buy one now, get one in 6 months' time. So buy one now, get one later, and with all the money coming up front. And the great thing about that idea, it wasn't an idea from within the business. It was an idea from the community. Their community said, why don't you do this? And they did that campaign, and they went from being sort of 600 grand in the red, you know, they, without being asked to pay their bills, to having a million plus quid in the bank in a week. It was just such a good story. And it also, you know, illustrates the power of the community. And most of the DTC brands I'm interviewing, especially the ones who've been founded in the last 3 or 4 years, there's a real emphasis on community in terms of, serving that community, but also the community helping the business grow.
Mike Stevens there telling us all about a very different kind of funding approach. What Mike called buy one now and get one in 6 months' time. An idea that was created by Snag's own powerful customer community. And you can find out more about Snag at snagtights.com. Snag's clever crowdfunding style fundraising was brought about by an urgent need and was kind of a DIY crowdfunding approach. Back at Snaffling Pig in 2019, the team were seeking further investment. This time, they were considering both private equity and crowdfunding. Udi picks up the story there for us.
So we explored both options. So we went round, met lots of private equity firms, high net worth individuals, and explored that as an opportunity. We also, crowdfunding, there were lots of success stories in terms of crowdfunding as well. And what we thought, I think looking at the two options of investment, they both serve their purpose for different needs. And I think as a consumer business, we thought crowdfunding is the way to go, because you then have your army of advocates who have bought into your brand, who will then start to share, hopefully, lots of positive messages about what you do, and they will get behind you when it comes to listings and new products and innovation. So we went down the route of let's explore crowdfunding, but do not underestimate, it takes a lot of work in terms of prep. And we did lots of what we would say kind of investor days. We would put pop-up banners in pubs and we'd say, we're hanging out here for 2 hours. Come and see us. Come and talk to us if you've got any questions. And we'd go and present to lots of business angels, because what we wanted to do is have a wide network of not just our customer base, but we wanted people that were everyday people that went into the pub, as well as those who were kind of more corporate institutional investors, to be part of our network. So we did a lot of, should I say, speculative touting to get people to buy into Snaffling Pig. And that really did pay dividends when it came to our fundraise, because it meant we had a real wide range. And we have investors who invested tens and twenties of thousands of pounds each, to lots of investors who put £10, £50, £100 in. But it just gave us a really broad community. And it's really powerful, because when we were looking at things like, we need a warehouse management system, or we need a CRM system, or can someone help us with our online payments, we'd write to our investor community and someone would know someone who'd be able to help us with something. So it's been a really powerful exercise. And I think as a brand, doing that raise has been really paramount in getting us to where we are today. And we've been very, very careful with the cash as well. We hear lots of horror stories where people will crowdfund and they'll spend their money on lots of wacky campaigns. And we've tried to conserve as much as we possibly can, because at the end of the day, the cash flow is such a lifeline. So we've tried to protect it as much as possible. And we genuinely have invested it in the things which we said we would do, which is a bit of marketing, social media, sales, and IT, which is our kind of warehouse management system.
Snaffling Pig raised just over £1 million on Crowdcube in October 2019 for a 10% stake, valuing the business at £10 million. And I think the Snaffling Pig experience shows that crowdfunding allows you to access a wide range of investors, including your fans, your best customers. And you know, we learned more about how to get the most from crowdfunding when we spoke to Scott Simpkin at equity crowdfunding platform Seeders. And we asked him, what kind of business is crowdfunding best suited to?
I'm going to split this into two, because there's people who are just starting up their ventures, pre-seed or seed level, and then people, founders that are raising institutional funding because they're well established. So that is, you know, raising above $1 million at Series A, Series B stage. For the first bit, the kind of seed and pre-seed level. I looked this up recently, a stat from last year, 40% of businesses that raise rounds under 500K did so through equity crowdfunding in the UK. That's a lot. So, you know, if we're already between, you know, basically seeders and Crowdcube doing 40% of fundraisers below 500K, there's a good reason to do it. You know, everybody else is, I guess, or at least half the rest of the people are. And then the second thing there is, you know, that more often than not is down to the fact that there's very few opportunities at really early stage to fundraise. You know, you need funds to get off the ground. But institutions tend to prefer to invest after you've reached £1 million, you know, annual recurring revenue. And, you know, really before then, you're only looking at angels, angel networks, and really speculative institutions. And I think a lot of founders are surprised by how hard it is to raise capital at that stage. So what we really do is enable you to pull together all of your resources under one roof. So when we fundraise, you know, in an equity crowdfunding round, it's not just seeders investors participating. It's your community, your personal network, people that you know from previous jobs, literally anybody that's got 10 quid that wants to back your business or believes in what you're doing. They all go under the same umbrella. You show the momentum in the campaign in terms of the progress bar. And it just gives you a really, really good momentum towards helping you complete a round. I'd certainly do it if I was running a company again for pre-seed and seed for that exact reason. I think momentum is everything in fundraising, and we're just a great way to advertise and market that momentum, you know, providing you're capable of creating it. For Series A plus founders, it becomes a lot more around what I mentioned earlier, which is getting customers on board with the mission, the plan. Yeah, really, really key, obvious thing is if you've invested £1,000 in a challenger bank or a fintech app, you know, you're not going to use any of their competitors, and you're going to tell all of your friends to use it as well, because you literally financially benefit if they do and the business continues growing. So a key reason for that, you know, consumer companies trying to raise large rounds, I think should all be considering it purely from a marketing point of view, even if they don't need the money. But actually, our investors also like later stage businesses. The money comes to in much larger amounts at that stage as well. So nice dual benefit for larger companies. But I'd say it's more about marketing for the larger ones, and more about, you know, pooling together momentum and doing something really hard and making it a little bit easier for the seed founders.
Scott Simkin from Seeders, who went on to tell us that at the heart of the crowdfunding process is the pitch. So what makes a great pitch?
When I advise businesses on this, there's kind of three tiers. So every investor thinks with three things: their head, their heart, and the little kid inside of them. Okay. So the head is, you know, they want to know financial projections. They want the valuation to make sense based on, you know, what they're investing in, the stage they're investing at. They want to ensure that there is a real logical reason why the business is going to grow based on actual evidence. Not, you know, a sales pitch for the future of the business, more based on what is done as the past. So you need to make sure you tick that one off as a must, I think, because every investor thinks a little bit with their head, but every investor also thinks with their heart, which is very much you need to be selling them a story that they want to get behind as something they believe in. In the same way as, you know, charities sell entirely to the idea that you're going to back because you have a heart and you believe in a cause and you want to back it. You know, early stage businesses are not dissimilar. If you have a cause you believe in, then it makes a massive difference. And I just talked about, you know, vegan foods and energy, renewable energy being two key themes the last 2 years. I have no doubt that was in large part heavily influenced by people wanting to back those causes because they felt it was good for the world. So that's really important. And then the little kid inside of them is the idea that you could be investing in the next Facebook or Airbnb. Like, investor wants to be excited, you know, they want to know that they've discovered the business at the very earliest stage, so they can tell everyone in 5 to 7 years when they exit for 10,000x return, which is the only, you know, the hottest articles you see every time there's an IPO is the people that got in at the first stage. You know, they just want to be excited that you're potentially that opportunity. So to put that into perspective of what you should actually put in the pitch, you know, let's say you're a bakery and you're saying, you know, we'll pay dividends in 3 years. We might expand to a new bakery site next year. You know, where are you going to be in 10 years time? You know, we'll have two bakeries and we'll have innovated our products. You know, that's not going to excite the little kid inside of an investor. They want to know, you know, we're going to challenge Greggs, you know, go that high. You know, we're going to be a pan-European bakery with, you know, Greggs sucks because it's poor quality and we want to make sure that we are going to hoover up the mid-market. You know, those kind of logical points that make sense that would I guess, enable a business to make the investor think that, you know, they've at least got a chance of achieving something really special. So, you know, providing you adhere to those three things, you're going to write a good pitch.
Cedars was acquired by US startup investment platform Republic in December 2021 for $100 million. And there are a number of crowdfunding options for you to consider, including equity crowdfunding platforms like Cedars and reward platforms like Kickstarter. Other equity crowdfunding platforms include Crowdcube and The Syndicate Room. And other reward-based platforms are Indiegogo and Crowdfunder, whilst Fundable offers both.
Don't forget the costs involved, which will of course be deducted from the total amount raised. And some platforms will expect you to be able to guarantee a minimum amount before they'll list you on their platform. That usually means you'll have done some discreet fundraising of your own before an investment is open to the public. The platforms do this because they want to minimize the number of investments that fail to reach their targets. As a general rule, they recommend that for a relatively smaller investment, say under £50,000, you go with a rewards-based platform and you use the equity-based platforms for the larger raises.
Let's now catch up again with Tastily's Will McDowell. And Will told us that, like most founders we speak to, investing properly in marketing was one of the most important steps on his scale-up journey. And it was one of the main reasons for embarking on his Series A fundraising.
The next step is a bigger raise as well. So I think there's a few routes that you can take in this industry. If you want to be content at sort of a reasonable sort of turnover and revenue and sort of get to profitable level and then stay at that level, that is possible. But my aim for Tastely has always been to be one of the big players in the space. So for us, we know that we're going to be going down an investment journey for the next 2, 3, 4 years and have started on that path. So we're planning out our Series A towards the end of next year, and we'll be raising sort of intermittently between then with sort of a seed fast round, which is like a convertible note to see us through to that Series A. So yeah, it's a lot of speaking to investors, a lot of pitching, a lot of LinkedIn. Without that, I think I've got 23 investors on board and 15 or 16 of them were just from reaching out to LinkedIn directly from myself. So it's a lot of that. This goes back to recruitment again and just being the person who's not afraid to message anyone and ask anyone to get involved.
Tastely's Will McDowell reminding us that fundraising is about putting yourself out there and, well, just asking for the money. It's interesting that he found over half of his investors on LinkedIn. And as he's reached his Series A funding, he'll be considering VCs, venture capital, alongside serious professional angel investors.
And talking of venture capital, we were delighted to welcome Chris Smith from Playfair Capital onto the podcast. And we asked him, angel investor or VC?
I think the ideal route is angel then VC. I think that you get a great angel investor who comes in, is passionate about what you do, who understands what VCs are looking for and is able to professionalize what you're doing, is able to make introductions, is able to sort of get you to the next level. And then the VC comes in and wraps around you the network and the support and the expertise to get to the next level. So in really simple terms, I kind of see this industry as it's almost like passing a ball. You know, you start your company, the angel investor has it, they do what they do to get it to the next level. You do your pre-seed or seed round. That fund should have the expertise you need at that point in time. So to grow from maybe the co-founders to a team of 20, to do your first, you know, help on your first product launch, whatever it is, you then hand the ball to the Series A fund and they're much better at the international expansion piece or whatever it is. So there is a very natural, nice trajectory you can go on. One thing I would say though is, there is absolutely nothing wrong with just taking angel investment and growing a really good sized business and then achieving an exit. because, you know, the more money you take on, the more dilution you have means you need a bigger outcome. And so not everyone wants to or should get on that treadmill.
Chris Smith from venture capital investors Playfair Capital. We went on to get Chris's opinion about that all-important pitch when you're raising. So what makes a great pitch?
For us, the best pitch is a dialogue. It's a two-way conversation. There's, you know, questions being asked, answers. And one of the things that interests me is that when we have founders, in the good old days when founders used to come to our office and we used to sit down and we used to ask them things like, oh, you know, where's your office and you know, how's your day going? And, yeah, tell us your story. What did you do? They're a bit surprised. They've already flipped open their laptop and they're kind of ready to do their presentation. And we're like, no, we're really interested in you as a person because that's what we're backing. So I think entrepreneurs should read quite a lot, actually, from how the VC treats them in that pitch meeting. I don't think it's right that you make it, as you say, such a macho kind of one-sided experience.
Chris Smith from Playfair Capital explaining that at the end of the day, funds aren't just investing in a business. They're investing in you, the founder.
And that's the sentiment that Horseplay Ventures' Nick Telson echoes when he's looking for businesses to back. Horseplay is Nick's angel investment platform, a business he created after successfully exiting from his own venture, Design My Night, which was voted one of the world's best startups in 2015. We asked Nick, at what stage is it right to think about an exit plan when you're seeking investment?
There is no, it's a right time to sell. I think what we did was very purposeful, and we knew, and we sat down with our investors as well and said, we want to exit within 5 years of our second round of funding. So that was part one. Part two was Andrew and I, very crassly, and money is, you know, a very dirty word for some reason, sat down and thought, well, look, how much do we want to take from Design My Night each? You know, how much do we want to walk away with as founders for this last 7 years to be worthwhile, and what we want on the next part of our life? Luckily, we were very aligned on the figure. And we then took that figure and worked it back. So we were like, okay, if we're going to take, I'm going to make numbers up here, if we're going to take £10 million each, that means we own, let's say, 30% of the company each. So we need to sell Design My Night for, say, £60 million. We then looked at the industry and saw software acquisitions were going for about 10 to 18 times your profit. So we said, okay, well, let's pick 12 times, and then knew that in 5 years, our profit needed to be 60 million divided by 12. And we basically charted that course over 5 years to get to that figure. The actual exit itself took a year from engaging with a broker to signing the documents to sell it. So the only sort of point for us on shall we sell was when we were a year out of our forecast to hit that profit figure that we wanted. You've also got to look at the market. So then, you know, obviously we didn't know coronavirus was coming, but we were no longer sort of the upstart. You know, we had the big boys, OpenTable, Bookatable, rounding in on us, copying us, because we were taking their market share. And, you know, these are multi-million, billion-dollar companies. So, you know, they were coming for our slice of the pie. We also had a few competitors coming over from America, sort of doing the USP that we were doing. So we just felt, you know what, everything's coming together at this right time. And we were both emotionally ready to sell it. You know, we were both knackered and didn't have that grit anymore. You know, we had 100 employees and you know, you need to be on your game every day to keep the business growing at the length that we were growing it. And then I think we both accepted that we weren't at that level anymore as founders. So all of those things came together to think, okay, now's the right time to try and sell.
Today, as well as investing, Horseplay operates a startup studio which offers entrepreneurs an alternative way to start up a business, as Nick explains.
So the idea is we have an idea, we validate it, we build it, we get it to market, we do the strategy, and then we actually bring in a founder with serious equity to actually run the business after, say, 6 or 8 months. And Andrew and I would be on the board and be very much in the background, but we wouldn't be in the office. We wouldn't, you know, the employees wouldn't really know us day to day. And then the idea is that you spin out one or two or three companies a year, and then have a portfolio of companies that you've created but aren't running day to day. So we've got our first idea that we're working on at the moment, which, if all goes to plan, will spin out probably midsummer. And that will be the first one out of our studio to sort of test this model. And then the final part of Horseplay is helping founders. So on our Horseplay website, we've got lots of free startup tools that you can just download. We don't even ask for your data. So there's like example pitch decks and P&Ls and revenue charts and podcasts we love. So all of that, you can just go on and download. And then I also do a podcast myself called Pitch Deck, which is like a Dragon's Den style audio, where a seed founder will pitch to myself and a guest angel. And it's really cool because we sort of lift the lid on angel investing. So obviously Dragon's Den is very sensationalized, and it's a TV show, which I think a lot of people don't actually realize. So, you know, we show, you know, the founder pitches to us, and then we do a live Q&A with the founder, as we would if we were in an angel meeting. So other founders get to really hear how an angel will critique a pitch. And then the angel and myself discuss that pitch without the founder there. So it's just a really good way to lift the lid on, you know, how you should pitch angels and what angels are looking for.
Nick Telson there, who started up his first business, Design My Night, with just £15,000 and went on to raise a further £500,000 in 2 rounds from 6 business angels. Nick and his business partner sold Design My Night in 2017 to the Access Group for one of those undisclosed amounts. But the Access business is currently valued at around $1 billion.
So that's what we've learned about raising money for your scale-up journey. Of course, everybody's journey is going to be different, but we hope this has helped you put the various options into context.
Yeah, and thank you to all of our guests. And as always, we'd love to hear your stories if you're on your own scale-up journey. Do get in touch with us at podcast@wearewaxon.com. That's podcast@wearewaxon.com.
And we'll be back soon with the next episode in our Scale Up Playbook, which is all about people.
Yeah, so now we've dealt with cash. Founders tell us that hiring and keeping the best people is probably the second most important thing on their scale up journey. So we'll be hearing from business leaders and scale up founders to really understand more about the people aspects of scaling a business.
And to make sure you don't miss out, please hit subscribe, and as soon as it's released, the episode will be with you automatically. And we'll see you then. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Bye.